Hello, you're listening to The Food Fix, a podcast where we talk with innovators who are figuring out how to better feed the world. My name's Petrolano Ali. Our guest on this episode is an innovator who's working on irrigation systems for farmers somewhere in East Africa. In Uganda, farmers in rain-fed agricultural communities depend on irrigation. Without irrigation, they battle with fluctuating and unpredictable weather conditions, droughts and flooding. Crops don't do well and yields are low. Researcher Abraham Solomon of the University of California, Davis, is working in eastern Uganda, collaborating with local farmers and social advocates and engineers on flexible and community-managed irrigation interventions. They've been installing and maintaining adaptable irrigation systems that allow tomatoes, beans, and other vegetables to thrive in the dry and unpredictable rainy seasons. He spoke to David Paulson for The Food Fix.
Mr. Solomon, welcome.
Thank you.
Why don't you describe a little bit where you're doing this, where you work, and why do we have irrigation needs in the neck of the woods?
Thank you. We're working in eastern Uganda. The reason we're specifically working there is it represents a pretty good diversity of agroecologies in East African region. So you have everything from relatively humid tropics to a bit more semi-arid tropics, as well as higher altitudes and medium altitudes. We also have different farming systems, different major crops and minor crops. So we're really looking at that as a way to identify some of the different issues which can cut across a lot of those different environments. That's why we're focusing on about six different research sites within eastern Uganda. And at each site, we're working with communities to try to identify what are those constraints on small-scale irrigation. And, you know, I think that we know very well quite a lot of research that has been done on how to improve irrigation systems, how to optimize water use. And I think we're looking at what are the actual local constraints, why irrigation hasn't picked up as much in East Africa as it has in other parts of the world.
At six different sites, and there's six different needs of irrigation. I mean, are some of these areas quite damp and some of these quite dry?
I mean, all of this is basically bimodal rainfall, so meaning that you have two wet and dry seasons in the year. During rainy season, of course, people, they don't need to irrigate, but farmers use irrigation as a way to target off-season vegetable production, basically fruits and vegetables and high-value crops. It's a very important part of people's livelihoods to have that off-season production for much greater income and also to smooth different incomes throughout the year.
Is climate change beginning to have an impact on some of these challenges?
Yeah, definitely. I think that in the past, people used to be very able to predict when rains would come and when they couldn't. In the last few years, we've really seen people failing to predict times when they expect rain, they haven't planted anything, times when it's supposed to be dry and it starts raining, and maybe they're targeting to have, you know, some good prices on their vegetables and then prices go down. So you find that actually planning for when you're going to be doing rain-fed production and irrigated production has become quite tricky.
So it sounds like the engineering, the mechanics of irrigation, we got pretty well figured out. That's not the issue. It's more of how it's used and how water might be owned or allocated.
It's an interplay between the technology, between the water rights and use and access, and the institutions around the community and how land is used and how people access water. So I think what our project is trying to do is not just focus on technologies, but really put those aspects together and understand, you know, what are the constraints and what are approaches that communities themselves can help us come up with so that when you consider land tenure, you consider access of water, who gets to use the water at different times, and then also what technological components can make it easier for people to actually expand irrigation or optimize the water that they're using or make it more fairly distributed. That's what we're looking at. So we're not trying to focus on a very limited part of it, which is just the technology component.
Can you give us some examples of what maybe some of the constraints are that are not technological that you're talking about and how you've tried to overcome them?
One thing that comes up almost everywhere is land. You find that land tenure, although in different sites, definitely there's differences, especially when you look at for women to access irrigated land can be quite difficult because typically they access land not by inheriting land or owning it, but through male relatives. So you find that maybe around a certain source of water, there's only a few people that own the land, and it's hard for women who aren't necessarily related to them to actually get irrigated plots there. So people, they try to rent plots. Others, one of the groups that we're working with have formed a women's group that actually hires out one plot as a group, and then they split up smaller pieces to their members.
Why is that an advantage? Do they put their buying power together to lease a big piece of land? Or?
Yeah, because each one of them can't afford to hire an acre of land. They put their money together as a small group and they can negotiate with the landlord who can give them like 1 acre near the water source, and then from there they can split it up into smaller portions which they each can afford. An area where there's a farmer group where they all basically grow vegetables. They all have very small plots scattered throughout a valley. And in this valley they have a couple of rivers that they use. But most people, they just irrigate very close to the river because they're mainly picking up the water and carrying it, or using watering cans, throwing it using wash basins. So what we wanted to do with them is now, how could it be possible to irrigate farther away from the river and use a lot more land in this valley? What they decided to do was we put in some irrigation system, which one of their members, who has the biggest piece of land in the valley, agreed that they would be hiring out plots a little bit farther away from the river to the other members who could then be irrigating it. So we put the system in place, and we just found that over time it was really hard to get other farmers to use the system. And we really had a lot of meetings with them to try to figure out why, to talk to the landlord and ask if there was any issue with that. They had their rules for how they were supposed to access the pump, which is used, and the sprinklers, which were used in the system. And we really couldn't find a very good reason why people weren't showing much commitment to using the system. Over time, it basically came out little by little that the landlord himself was really quite a difficult person to work with. Not explicitly refusing that people could use the land or use the technology, but they would negotiate for a certain size of a plot, which somebody would think is like an economically feasible plot. You could irrigate there and make some money. Then when they go to actually start cultivating, he cuts it by, you know, 4, and you get a very small plot, and yet somebody's walking a long distance from their home to go and irrigate there, so they lose interest. Somebody else wants to use the pump on a certain day, but he says, I'm going to town today, you can't use the pump, I'm not around. The group decided that the system that we put in place, what we can do is we cut it up into smaller pieces, and we distribute it at different points in the valley, and then even though each smaller component of that system will be irrigating only 3 or 4 plots instead of, you know, 20 plots, but it's much better to have the same system cut up at different points where different people can use it rather than have it in one place, just because I think the risk of having something like that happen is much higher. And if you have it distributed in different places, even if it has an issue in one place, the other farmers will use it very well. Each of these subgroups which was formed really now wants to use the system very well.
Does any of your work at all, does it involve the technology, or is it primarily this kind of social structure stuff we're talking
about? No, definitely the technology also comes in. We do try to use technology to eliminate some of the problems that they're having. So for an example, in that place I was just talking about, people are used to getting water for free. You know, the water, it's a surface irrigation system mainly for rice and then dry season vegetables. So it's going to be very hard to convince somebody to pump a lot of water for it. So that one we're using furrow irrigation. The place is very flat and suitable for furrows, but we really have a conscious effort to reduce as much losses as possible. So we're trying to use the technical design to really make it very efficient. And the way we're doing that is, instead of having earthen canals, we pump water from the river, we pipe it through some PVC pipes, and then we have takeoff pipes which take the water very close to the field canals. So it actually passes a very short distance through earthen canals before it reaches the field. At least that's a way that, for the amount of money that they spend in pumping the fuel, at least they maximize the amount of water that gets into their field. Planning that design also is part of it, and we think that some of those technical approaches, even if they're not new technologies, but it's a new way of delivering water to that field, at least in eastern Uganda, eastern Africa, we think that some of those things will be widely applicable as well. So we're trying to use these as examples that we can give to other practitioners to say that if your site is of this type, we've tried these kinds of technologies and they're working very well, and we can show the efficiency of them.
What's the most exciting thing you've seen?
I think that just when you put an irrigation system in a farmer's field and they never really thought it was going to be there, and they really see how they can really expand what they're doing, how the work can become far more easier compared to, you know, using manual labor to irrigate, I think you really see a lot of potential there. And of course, it's a slow process in reaching the kind of uptake that you would want. But when you get a farmer who really gets it and really is excited about it, it really makes all the difference. I mean, there are farmers now in some of the sites where they never were part of the original area that was inside the new technology, but they've already extended the system just to reach them. So when you go back and you see that this person has bought some extra pipes on their own and they've put the water at their place, it really makes you feel like you're doing something. The approach that we're trying to take right now is, there was a farmer that actually trained them how to do the nursery bed, and he was also very impressed by the site. So we thought that why don't we pair these two people with this experienced farmer who has been growing vegetables for 30 years, let him rent a plot at the same place, grow his onions, and meanwhile they also grow their onions, they sell it together, and I think that being motivated by the person who's been doing it for a long time is where we're trying to bring out that aspect. And you really see farmers learn best from other farmers.
It really does sound like technology may be important, but it's not the most important, is it?
Yeah, I mean...
Or is it not even important at all?
No, definitely it's important. Like, one of the things that we're learning about technology, for instance, is like precipitation rates, when you're talking about like sprinklers. Farmers really, because of so many other household responsibilities, especially women, you know, they can't spend a whole day irrigating. They have to come and they irrigate and they go home and they do their other things. So we really look at now, sprinklers which were designed to irrigate for 5 or 6 hours, you know, are not going to be convenient for them. So we're looking at how can we design a sprinkler system which somebody can come and irrigate for 1 hour and then go home and do their other things and still be able to do it in an interval, not like coming twice a day to irrigate, but to still make it reasonable that fits into somebody else's activities in their life. And at the same time, it can water a crop well. Mm-hmm. So like what we're looking at right now is how can we play with the sprinklers to, you know, triple the application rate. So that's a technological issue that I think we're trying to work on right now. Another one is sometimes just how the system is managed. Like in one of the places, farmers have been, in order to save costs, they've been taking HDPE pipes, which are quite heavy, and they're moving them from plot to plot with sprinklers attached to them. Along when they do that, number one, it's quite a lot of work to move these HDPE pipes. And also, they, you know, when they drag it, they damage crops, they damage the sprinklers themselves. So women are also saying that it's only these young boys who are strong who can do that work of irrigation because it involves moving these pipes around. And so when we're in that process of designing an innovation with them, we brought up the idea of we have a fixed pipeline and we have a flexible wire-reinforced pipe which can go to a single very large sprinkler, like a rain gun sprinkler. So basically all you have to carry is this big sprinkler and then the stand for it. So that was another technological solution whereby we just changed the design of it a little bit. We changed how the sprinklers move. Instead of moving the whole pipe, we just moved the sprinkler. And it's actually been working very well for people, and they say now it's easy for anybody, whether, you know, an old lady or a young boy can use it.
You're moving the sprinkler but not the pipe?
Yeah, so...
Because the sprinkler is attached by a hose to the pipe?
Yeah, so we have a pipe which is fixed in place in one field at a wider spacing compared to the system they were doing before where it was they would have to move it to many more locations. Now from that main pipe which is fixed in one place, you have a flexible pipe which basically you can just bend it anyway, so it's very easy to use.
Less flexible than a hose? You wouldn't call it a hose?
It's like a hose, but a really big hose. Uh-huh. It's like a hose is maybe, you know, 3/4 inch. This is a 2-inch pipe.
Okay.
But it's basically like a hose. And so from that hose, there's a way you can attach it to that fixed pipe, and then you can put it in the bottom of this sprinkler. So then the sprinkler, you can just locate it anywhere you want to irrigate at one time, and then just put it on this tripod, and it can irrigate a big area. So all you carry is this hose, and then the sprinkler, and this tripod. So it really means that now moving that system around to different places becomes very simple for them.
Well, no, that sounds like a really great innovation. Have you had it out in the field long enough that mm-hmm. you know it's a great innovation?
Yeah, I mean, what we're trying to do at the moment is go through at least 2 seasons, hopefully, of each site where they're doing the different innovations and collect all of the data on what's going in and what's coming out of the plots. So we're looking at the operations costs, you know, the chemicals that they're spraying, the seed costs, labor, how many labor hours they're putting in, how many people are working. One of the things that comes up all the time is the physical pain of irrigation. They say, you know, that it really makes your, when you do irrigation one day, the next day it's hard to do other work because you're in a lot of pain. So we actually ask them to rate the pain that they're going through. So we're trying to collect all of that data and also the harvest and the income that they're getting. And we really try to track, you know, compared to the system that they were doing before and the new technologies that they're putting in place, try to look at those changes. So we want to go through that for a couple seasons. We review it together with the farmers. We ask them how it was going. We provide them with some of the data that we're collecting. And hopefully by the end of the project, we'll be able to really quantify so that for resources for other people in the region that would want to use some of those technologies, we can say, well, when we've tried it with people in the site, we found that, you know, labor went down by this amount, that, you know, incomes went up by this amount, and really try to have some better information about it.
So would you say the technology looks promising, but you're not sure yet because all the data isn't in? Or?
you can see it from yourself and you can be convinced by it. But I think that what we would like to do is to have some of that hard data, especially if now you're talking to somebody who maybe is thinking of putting some financial investment. It's good for them to know what's going to be the return on it.
Yeah.
But I mean, definitely from working at the site, you can see the ones that are really having a potential.
I'm trying to think of what the unanticipated consequences might be. Maybe the hoses wear out fast, and so there's a high replacement cost.
Yeah, I mean, I think compared to the other system, I mean, I don't see that one wearing out a lot faster than the others.
Uh-huh. But
yeah, I mean, that's why we have feedback with communities, because well, the people that are using it are going to be the ones that tell us that why they don't, what they don't like about the system. You know, usually you meet with the community, you come up with a design, and you say, what's wrong with it? And they say, no, this one looks much better, right? But the truth is, when they use it, they'll find things to complain about. So mm-hmm. That's why we want them to use it, to tell us really what's not good about it, and we keep changing.
What's next?
I think that we want to test out these systems, make changes. One of our partners is called Busitama University. It's Uganda's main engineering school, where they train agricultural engineers, people that are working on irrigation, also agriculture students and water resource students. We're moving into a phase whereby now we have sort of the main backbone of these innovations in place, and they're ready to use. And some of the places are really using them already. So what we want to do now is work with those students to go through the innovation design cycle, whereby we assign teams of students to each site. They can work with some of the farmers at each place to identify, okay, based on the system, the way you're using it now, what are some things you'd like to change? How could it be made better? Come up with all kinds of ideas about different technological improvements that could be done, trying to narrow them down to the ones they want to prototype, prototyping it with the farmers, getting feedback, making changes. The same kind of process that we go through on the site scale, we now want to do it really on a much smaller scale, targeting smaller issues within those sites. By working with undergraduate and graduate students, it's also going to be a very good learning experience for them and also for the farmers to pair together and really come up with tweaks and innovations within that context of this new irrigation system. So I would say that as we're trying to evaluate the main systems, we also want to come up with smaller scale innovations that fit into that.
Well, Abraham Solomon, thank you for being with us on the Food Fix.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's it from me, Petrolano Ali, on this episode of the Food Fix. Now we want to hear from you. Email us with your questions and comments at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. The Food Fix is a production of the Translational Scholars Program at Michigan State University with funding from the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation, a development lab funded by USAID. Our theme music is a song, Watching My Garden Grow, by two of our favorite Michigan artists, Lindsay Liu and Josh Rilko. Thank you for listening and have a great day.